If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We're not renting a room to grandma or grandpa. We're right. providing a service to them. So the residents themselves live in the house. Their family is the one who writes the check and pays for it. We don't do state pay or we do private pay. But your tenant is truly going to be that operator.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Gene Guarino has trained tens of thousands of people in the residential assisted living space, and I can think of no one better to talk to about this than Gene himself. So without further ado, let's jump right in and hear what Gene has to say about residential assisted living and how we can get involved.
Hey, Gene, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, this is awesome. This is awesome. You bring both a wealth of industry experience as well as a unique, I think, perspective on real estate. And so I would love just to kind of hear your story of where you started, where you are now, how you got there, and, you know, we'll see where it goes from there.
You got it. You know, I think a lot of people do get started in residential, and I did, but I didn't. I've been an entrepreneur since I was a teenager. So I was a tenant when I was 16. We were leasing a property for commercial purposes. It was really a house. We were running a business out of it. And we did that for 2 years. It was a music school, recording studio, small record label. I was a teenage musician and a professional musician. So we did that for a couple of years. Then we ended up buying our very first property at the age of 18. So we lived upstairs. We converted the downstairs for the new studio and music school. And that was our first foray into real estate investing. And first commercial was age 20. That was age 18, by the way. Age 25 was the first commercial. And that was a long time ago. So I've been doing real estate for decades and seen a lot of ups and downs. But the thing I do now is a little unique in residential assisted living.
Tell us about that. What is residential assisted living?
Yeah, we take single family homes and convert it for senior housing. But it's not just the housing, it's assisted living. So as soon as I say seniors and anything, they think, you know, medical. They think like a big building where it's a big complex. We don't do medical, but it's somebody who can't be home alone and they don't need a nursing home or skilled nursing. So it's right in between. We call it residential assisted living. So the numbers work really, really well. There's really two parts, a real estate play and a business play. And a lot of people like to do just the real estate part, but you can also make a lot of money doing the business part too. But single family homes converted for residential assisted living. The homes we use are 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
They probably have a lot of bedrooms and a lot of bathrooms. Now, most homes don't start off with 10 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms. So it's all about the location. And for anybody who's looking to be the real estate investor, we call them a preferred real estate provider for somebody who's doing this group home in assisted living. The location is really what's critically important. So I think one of the really cool things about this is most people, when they do real estate in the residential realm, they're thinking about fix and flip. And that just means I got to buy it underneath so I can put some in and make some profit. Or it's this buy and hold. And when you're buying and holding that single family rental, yeah, you can make $100 a month, $200 a month, but hard to scale, as you know. And then from there, you know, $100 a month, in order to make something significant, we need a lot. So let me flip it around. If you had that same 4,000 square foot house, instead of renting it to a family for $2,000 and making a couple $100 a month, maybe you rent it to an operator of a residential assisted living. Maybe they'll be willing to pay twice the fair market rent. So $4,000. So if you're collecting four instead of two, the extra $2,000 is all profit. So now that's scalable in that you only need a handful, four or five of those houses to make your $10,000 a month or whatever the nut is you're trying to crack. The person who's operating the business, you might be thinking, why would they pay twice the market rent? Because they're going to operate a business where they can make $10,000 a month because they're operating the business and taking care of that part of it.
Yeah. So walk me through this. I find a house, it's 6,000 square feet. Where do I go from there? Like, how do you decide whether you're not going to be operated or just be the landlord? How do you find tenants? How do you find operators? Is this state specific?
Sure. Or? See, I did my job. You now have 100 different questions. I love it.
I have more than that, I'm sure.
So here's the thing. The first thing I'm going to say, because again, this is about real estate on this show. And right. the first thing is, I don't want you to buy the property first. In this case, I want you to find that tenant first. Then with that tenant who, let's say they just, we just did a 3-day class. And let's say it's somebody who just came out of the class. They've got our support and they're trained, they're knowledgeable. And they're saying, wow, I have to go get the real estate. You're going to now come in, or your listeners are going to come in the picture and say, look, I'm willing to be the real estate investor. Let's talk. Let's decide where it's going to be, because that operator knows the location and that's critically important. They know what to look for, et cetera. The real estate investor knows how to get a great deal. So that's their part. But the location is critically important. So I'd want you to work with that tenant first so that you can pick the right location, because they're ultimately going to sign a lease. And it's not a 1-year lease. It might be a 5-year lease with 5-year renewals. So think long term and high rates.
Is the pool deep of, you know, potential tenants for this type of investment?
It is interesting, because when you say, is the pool deep? Great way to ask it. Right now, there's about 30,000 communities, and that's everything from single family homes to Brookdale. 2/3 of them, so 25,000 or 20,000 of them, are single family homes being operated as this. You may say 20,000 is a lot, but that's concentrated in certain areas, like Florida has 3,000, Arizona has 3,000, California has almost 7,000, et cetera. So there's different areas, but their seniors are all over the country. The key for you, though, is not the real estate, or when I say you, meaning whoever's going to buy that real estate, it's not getting the real estate, it's finding that tenant. So where's the honeypot or that deep pool? Well, one, you can go, this is the hard way, go to the state's website, find all the homes, contact them onesie, twosie, and say, do you want to expand, et cetera? Easier, the people who are sitting in our class this weekend, some of them are, that's all they wanted. It was to meet somebody who can be the tenant or be that person who's going to lease it from them. But also, again, we're creating this, by the time people are hearing this, this will be available, what we call a preferred provider of the real estate for these group homes. And we're putting that together so we can put a list, a directory of people who are saying, I'll buy the house and lease it to you at a high rate. And let's have that conversation so we can find that location and do this.
Right. Okay. So in a typical rental situation, you know, you would have, you know, which is, I think is always paltry, but you'd have some sort of deposit put down, things like that in case of damage. I mean, we're really retrofitting these houses though. This isn't a typical, hey, family moves in. This is 6,000 square feet and we need to maximize bedrooms and bathrooms out of this. Is that right?
It is. That's right.
Right. So we're doing a very extensive rehab typically on this type of property.
So just like any kind of commercial, the landlord, the tenant, you all have a choice and it's negotiation. Because if I were consulting you as the landlord, I'm going to say, yes, let's have the tenant pay for the TI, tenant improvements. Whatever they want to do is fine. On the other hand, if I'm consulting with that tenant, I'm going to say, hey, I want the landlord to do it. That's why we're paying twice the market rent. More than likely, that person who's going to get the house and lease it out is going to do some work to it. They're going to make some modifications, renovations to it. What we want to do is we want to get in before anything is done. So we're not redoing something. You just put in a beautiful bathroom and we're like, take out the bathtub. We just want to walk in or roll in shower.
Right. What about this? So let's say 5 years from now, this operator, or what did you call him, an operator? Or what did you call him?
An operator.
Yeah. So the operator gets in there, they run the business for 5 years and they're a complete failure and they decide that they don't want to renew. Right. So now you've got this house, the 6,000 square foot house, completely remodeled that can only really now be used as residential assisted living.
Not necessarily. It could be a group home for sober living, transitional living. It could be a Golden Girls house, could be for special needs, autism. I can name you 20 different ways that house could be used. You know, the question though is, what am I going to do with this house? It's been retrofitted for this purpose.
Right.
And I'm going to change the conversation by saying, what's the highest and best use? Retrofitting it back to a single family home that's got only a limited amount of income, or a group home where somebody can pay you twice as much. So there's a third option too. It's you could retrofit it. Let's say on one hand, you convert the garage into bedrooms, you add 3 bathrooms, you divide a big bedroom into 2 smaller bedrooms. So you accommodate for this group home situation. And now those people go away for whatever reason. Maybe they bought a home down the street and moved the business there. Right. By the way, that's incredibly unlikely for a couple of reasons. They can't just move the people from one place to another. It's just not that easy. The real scenario is they're probably going to buy the house from you. They're going to say, look, I want to exercise my option to buy the property at the current appraised price because now my business is up and running, incredibly successful, and let's keep going. or they're going to sell the business to somebody else who's going to come into it. Very unlikely it's going to go out of business, at least if it's one of our students. Let's put it that way. We know what we're doing. We teach them. Somebody out of the blue, that I don't know. The reality is you could retrofit it back to residential, which I wouldn't recommend. You could release it to somebody else doing something else with a group home that it would highly recommend. Or that individual who owns the real estate might say, you know, I wasn't interested before, but now I am. I'll start the business. Because that business itself, remember I just said sell it? You can create a business you can sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars in addition to the real estate.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Oh, options to buy. When it comes to options, is that something you guys typically, you know, put in your leases? Is that the operator then has an option to buy at some point?
If it's one of my students, I definitely want them to have an option to buy. So I think that's important. Whoever's listening right now, if you're the tenant, doesn't it make sense to have an option to buy? You do that with your car. The end of 3 years, you can either say, here's the keys, give me another one, or let me buy it and I own it. So with real estate, it should be the same thing. And the other thing is, if I'm going to pay twice the market rent, I'm going to negotiate and say, look, if the normal rent is $2,000 and I'm paying you $4,000, how about if I get that $2,000 that I'm giving you, if I exercise my option, I can apply that towards the purchase price and the down payment. Now, in the future, when I go to the bank, I've already got a down payment because it's that rent credit that I've accumulated by paying the landlord extra money every single month.
Right, right. Okay, that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit on the operations side. And I think we're already kind of there. How do you find tenants? Like, I know I'm not tenants, excuse me. I guess clients, I guess you might call them.
Yeah,
residents.
Good.
Residents. How do you find residents?
Well, that's perfect, because I was about to say, you know, they're not tenants because we're not renting a room to grandma or grandpa. We're providing a service to them. So the residents themselves live in the house. Their family is the one who writes the check and pays for it. We don't do state pay or we do private pay. But your tenant is truly going to be that operator, that person who's running that business as the one leasing it from you for 5 years. But that operator, how do they get that resident? There's a whole bunch of different ways to market to get the word out. So we teach people how to do the market research to know how many beds, how many people, how many beds are needed. You know, what is the likelihood of, to research the competition, to know exactly what the pricing is. And then it's a matter of getting the word out. So the marketing is not typically a billboard. Sure. As much as it is word of mouth, referral sources from people who are interacting with those people that have the need.
So somebody comes to you, they move in, it's private pay. I mean, are you taking care of meals? Are you taking care of, like, is this a full, so this is basically an assisted living. I mean, it is assisted living, obviously residential assisted living, but I mean, it's a full on business.
It is a full on business. You know, just like when you think about a restaurant, and you know, some of you unfortunately haven't been in a restaurant for a while, go out and eat, support people. So in a restaurant, when you go there, people don't quite realize it, but more than likely, somebody owns the dirt. There's one entity that owns the dirt.
Right.
They've leased the dirt for 99 years to another entity that owns the building, who now leases that to the what you see as the restaurant.
Right.
So they come in and they've got all the moving parts and they're making money. It's a business itself, but one person owns the real estate, somebody else owns the dirt, and everybody's making money. They're just playing their part in the equation.
Got it. Got it. That's interesting. So who would you recommend, gets into this? Like, what's the ideal investor in this space?
You know, I asked you up front, who are your listeners, the average listeners? And the reality is the person who's brand new at real estate more than likely is about quick cash. So they like wholesaling and fix and flip because it's quick cash.
Sure.
Then as we progress on, people get to the point where it's like, well, I want some cash flow. So we do rentals. And a lot of people start in residential rentals, making $100 or $200 a month. And then we get to the point where it's like, okay, I want more than that. And I don't want to be working that hard. So we get into commercial, which is where you're starting your whole premise right here. So this right here, when you say who wants to get in it, more than likely it's somebody who's got more experience rather than less. They're past the point of needing or wanting just quick cash to survive. And more than likely, they're thinking about how can I scale something to get much bigger? We have some students who their plan is to do 100 homes. So when I say 100 homes, there might be 10 residents in each one. So that 100 homes with 10 residents is servicing 1,000 people. But that 100 homes is now a big enough scale that that can be sold off to the hedge funds, because that'd be worth potentially a couple of $100 million.
Right.
You and I may only be in it for $1 million per home, and they're willing to pay $2 million per home, because the bigger you scale, the more valuable it is.
Right. Yeah, they're going to pay for the income. you know, that whatever your NOI is on that deal, they're going to pay a multiple of that. That's fascinating. What about compliance?
Every state is a little bit different, but every state does have rules and regulations. And frankly, I like and don't like rules and regs. The reason why I like them is I know what the game is. I know where to play and how to do it. When a state doesn't have rules and regulations, it's a little trickier because we kind of have to figure out, is this okay? What do you think about that? Most states have rules and regs. Really, there's three requirements. The house needs to be senior safe, not ADA compliant. We're not hiring people with handicaps to take care of somebody with a handicap. Right. So ADA compliance is not it, but safe. So grab bars by the toilets and the showers, maybe certainly smoke detectors, maybe sprinklers if it's required, ramps at the front door. So senior safe. Two, I need to have somebody in charge. The state may call that a manager, a facility manager, an administrator. That person has certain qualifications. We hire that person. Third, I need policies and procedures. So here's the rules of how we operate the business, because the state needs to know that you're able to take care of these seniors. You know what you're doing. You're going to keep them safe. And you want to know that your manager has rules to follow. Not that I'm doing it. They're doing it. If you do this right, you own the business, you might spend 5, maybe 10 hours a week in the business itself. The rest of it is you're not going out to see the property. You don't need to. We've got the proper team in place for that.
Right, right. That's fascinating. And do all 50 states allow residential assisted living?
They do in Puerto Rico too. But the reality is some states are easier to do business in, period. Mm. And some are really good. Like, for instance, a lot of Californians out there, they're just making life difficult. They're pushing people out as fast as they can. I wouldn't jump there to do business, but there's almost 7,000 of these homes there. Arizona is good for this. Texas is a great business for state. New York, New England. Sorry, guys. I'm from there originally. So good old boy. It's just like, who do I pay? I got to pay somebody off to get it done. And, you know, at least if I know the right person, I can figure it out. But I don't want to play that game if I don't have to.
Right.
But there's so many states with so many people, so much need all across the country.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, if you have the your pick of where to invest, you know, why not do that? Do you have people that do this out of state?
We have a national convention. And one of the questions we asked everybody at this year's national convention, how many of you operate remotely? So out of state. And it was about 30%. So 30% of the people live in Alabama and they own their home in Georgia, or they live in California, very common, and they have their home in Arizona.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah, because that takes a whole, for any of you listening, here's an idea. That brings a whole new turnkey, even potential model, mm-hmm. for people who are making turnkey, single family rentals. You could almost do turnkey residential assisted living for out-of-state investors.
Oh, you absolutely could. I mean, right now, one of the biggest questions we get is, Gene, one of the fast ways you taught us that we could get started is to buy an existing home. How do I find one? How do I know if it's a good deal?
Right.
All of those things. So when we have somebody, maybe it's a student, maybe it's not, who has got the right building, they've got all the permits, everything's in place, they've got the business, and now they're willing to sell it, that could be a great way to go. So you, like you said, what happens if somebody moves out, they're bad? You might say, well, let me start up the business and I'll just lease the building and sell the business to somebody else. We'll add another couple grand a month. You own the business now, and I'm leasing you the house that you're operating out of.
Right, right. That's fascinating. Gene, let's jump into the final four here if we can. If you were to distill everything you know about residential assisted living, and you're going to give one piece of advice to somebody looking to get into it, what's that one piece of advice?
Learn what to do from somebody who knows how to do it before you even attempt to do it.
So you can self-plug here.
I'm just saying, if you look up residential assisted living, you're going to find pretty much me, us. We got a huge team, though. It's incredible. And actually, I'm going to give your guys a gift if you want. But I wrote a book called Blueprint, How to Start Your Own Residential Assisted Living Business. And this book itself, I wrote it this year because I get that question a lot. How do I get started? So I'm going to give you that gift at the end.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Find a mentor in this space. That's you have to. I couldn't imagine going this without somebody that knows what they're already doing. That's fantastic. What's one thing you're doing currently to stay on top of your game?
So many things. All right. So one thing that I'm doing currently to stay on top of my game, bringing on good team members, because I can only do just so much. But I get things sent to me all the time from team members. Hey, here's this article. Here's this website. Here's a book. And here's something I'm doing. So building your team and investing in them.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. And when it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
You know, what's really cool is that with what we do, our motto is do good and do well. So doing well, make a lot of money. Doing good is helping others, leaving the world a better place. So our daily is that doing good, leaving it a better place. This year, I mean, I don't even want to say it, but by the end of this year, we will have donated over $1 million to charity, which is pretty cool. And wow. I'm excited about that. And I think a lot of people want to give, but you can't give what you don't got. So that's good, but that's money. I think helping people live their life and help them with it is really what we're all about.
Right. And I'm sure there's a lot of kind of arm's length reward from seeing people get to move into quality homes. I mean, I can only imagine, and this is a question, and I should have asked this earlier, maybe I'll just go for it, but what is the typical cost? Like, is it less expensive for residents to move into these types of homes, or is it about the same as what they might look at other assisted living facilities? Is it more?
It's the same or more. So let me explain. Right now in America today, the average is $4,300 per month per person to be in a private room in assisted living. So that's big box, residential, everything in between. When we price it, somebody pays their $5,000. It includes everything. So we don't charge extra for all the little things. If somebody goes to Brookdale, a large assisted living community with 100, 200 beds, it might be $3,500 a month, but then they have a menu. Like, does mom want to eat? Does mom have medications? Does mom need transportation? So all of those extras might be another $3,500. So we have an all-inclusive, here's what it is, and people are paying $4,000, $6,000, $8,000 a month per person per month.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool that you get to put people in and have a streamlined system that they can get involved with. And it's just not confusing for the end user. That's fantastic. Yep. Sorry to take a left turn on there. Last question. How do we get in touch with you?
You know, I'm going to give you a website and you can go right here and get this book and download it right now. And if you want us to ship you a copy, I'll give you the book. You pay for the shipping, right? Just let us know. But three letters, three numbers, RAL101.com. RAL101.com. If you go there, you can download the book. There's some webinars you can watch, and you can set a phone call with one of our team members to get all of your questions answered.
Fantastic. Gene, thank you so much for your time today. This was awesome. Certainly appreciate it.
You bet.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.